You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello all. Welcome to another episode of Armchair Cricket Podcast, a podcast focusing on test cricket by armchair critics of the game. I'm your host, Ajit. In today's episode, we have a much sought-after returning guest, Leah. Hello, Leah. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Ajit. Thanks for having me back. Hello, everyone.
Always a pleasure having you,
Thank
Leah.
You.
This close to the World Cup, are you feeling nervous? Do you have a team you're backing?
Well, maybe the last India-Australia game made me a bit nervous for the hosts, actually.
Uh-huh. That's not a bad outlook. So I think let's first go to the Bangladesh-New Zealand series, then come to the India one as well. So did you get a chance to catch any of these Bangladesh-New Zealand games at all?
Not really live, because they were on at a rather inconvenient time for me. So New Zealand was playing really, really well in the subcontinent here. I think
that is a positive for sure, because look, they won the series, right? So they took the second and the third ODI. The first one was washed out. And in fact, in the first one, they were in a bit of trouble. But when it came to second and third one, they were solid. So batting first in the second, they made 254 on the back of a lot of decent contributions. Tom Blundell, Henry Nichols. Ish Sodhi actually making some very, very crucial runs. I dare say Ish Sodhi making the runs that won New Zealand that game, if you ask me. Because if New Zealand had been bundled out for around 220, 230, or even 210 maybe, then Bangladesh would have probably chased that down much easily. Because look, Mehdi Hasan, Nasoom Ahmed, Khalid Ahmed, they did a good job to start off. And that basically meant, you know, New Zealand were always chasing a little bit of a good total. So at 7 for 187, they could have been 210 all out. But then the tail hung in there, 219. Kyle Jamieson did a little bit. 20 runs is still worth it. Lockie Ferguson, who was the captain, made 13. But they all batted around Ish Sodhi, right? And even Trent Bolt did a little bit. So they were all out in the last over. They lasted their innings. The last 10 overs they were able to, last 10 overs they were able to make use of, score more than 60 runs, which was crucial. So when it came their turn to bat, Tamim Iqbal, who was playing that ODI, seems to have done enough, scored 44. Mahmoodullah, who was coming back, made 49. But again, a similar sort of a story from the top order and lower middle order, because 168 in 41 overs, you think would be a little bit of a disappointment if you're a Bangladesh fan.
Absolutely. That's really the problem in this scorecard. There are only three scores over 20. Two of them being, well, something I would call a substantial innings in an ODI. That's Tamim, Mahmoodullah, And then there's 121 in there from Nassim Ahmed. This is a real problem from a batting perspective, I think. There are two ducks. Yusaka, one of their middle order, out for a duck.
Right.
And no contributions from the tail there.
Look, you would be very worried. Simply because, okay, they're playing without many of their main players, you would say, in the second one. But then, not a lot changed in the third one, where they had a couple of other big names back. So, Nazmul Hussain Shanto was leading the side. Mushfiqur Rahim came back.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the bowling attack was still a bit experimental. But they got to bat first. They didn't do much better for themselves. 171, again, some middling contributions from the middle order, 18, 21, 13. But then Nazmul Hussain Shanto did a decent job, 76. But nobody batted with him. There was no other 30, 40, 50 contribution. Mm. And batting first at in home conditions, I mean, they wasted 15 overs. That's unacceptable. Because in the previous game, Sodhi had done it all. He had taken even a 6 far in the second one. But when you look here, it was mostly the fast bowlers. Trent Bolt 2, Adam Milne 4, Lockie Ferguson 1, right? And between the three spinners, I think Ravindra, Cole McConchie and Sodhi, they've showed very, very good skills of tying the batsman down, right? So I was very impressed with that because you would not expect that they would play with such maturity, the spinners from New Zealand.
Absolutely not. But they can really... Sometimes they can really surprise you, New Zealand. They have a spinner with a 10-for in tests.
Right.
Even though they're not really known for their spinners, they tend to do a bit better in the subcontinent than English spinners, I feel.
I mean, that's very interesting that you say it like that. But I think these days, especially when it comes to England, when you have the Rashid and Moeen Ali, they're a different kind of fish. But when it comes to New Zealand, you would think they're, again, punching well above their weight. See, there is no Santner here. See, Sodhi is still their leading spinner. He's there. He's leading the attack. Rachin Ravindra's really, really measured up well when it comes to his bowling. For a batsman who can bowl part-time, at least let's just start like that. He's done a very good job, I would say.
Yes.
Right? And somebody like Cole McConchie, is always, you know, he's doing a good job. Whenever he gets a chance, he gets some runs in. Whenever he gets a chance, he bowls a little. And you can see the same thing. He's, he took a 2-for in 5 overs here. And when it came to their batting, Finn Allen gave them a quick start, made sure the bowlers were unsettled early on. And then Will Young and Henry Nichols played time. So Will Young sort of kept up with the scoring rate, scored at 87. But Henry Nichols played a proper test match innings, took 86 balls over a 50. But then you know that with about 30-40 runs left, the game is over. All you have to do is get to 150 with enough time left in the game. And you know the game is done. That's exactly what they did. And they won nearly 15 overs to spare. So that was a very, very comprehensive series win, do you think, for New Zealand?
I think so. It makes them, I think, at least the dark horses in this upcoming World Cup. They have shown that they can perform in subcontinental conditions here in this warm-up series against Bangladesh and, of course, India and Pakistan will be a very different kind of challenge for them. But they have shown glimpses of brilliance here. And the most important thing, I think, for New Zealand here is that one game they won with their spinners, but also their fast bowlers performed really well in the third match. This looks like a well-balanced side, I think, for the upcoming World Cup.
Absolutely. Look, at least Milne again proved why he should be a immediate cab of the rank situation for New Zealand if somebody were to be
absolutely
injured. So I would say that's good. That's good that Milne put his foot forward the right way. And New Zealand are also without many of their first-choice players, right? There's no Mitchell, there's no Williamson. Right, and many, there's no Glenn Phillips, so they have really accounted well for themselves. Their fast bowlers have tuned up well, but from this perspective, if you look a little bit, you know, looking into a crystal globe,
Liam,
how do you see New Zealand perform?
I have them at least reaching the semis. I won't say more because they might run into, I don't know, they might run into a team that beats them. Uh-huh. I think they will go to the semis, but I won't predict if they make the final, because Australia should never be counted out in white ball cricket and in a World Cup. Mm. Mm. India is also really, really strong, and with England it's probably going to be either feast or famine, but they could also make the semis and have a best ball day against New Zealand again. So I have them reaching the semis. They might win their semi-final, but that is the minimum I expect from them to reach the semis.
That's a bold thing to say, at least from what I've heard so far. Nobody else was ready to, at least none of my previous guests were ready to give them a chance until the semi-final. But that's a bold call. Let's see if that comes through. But from Bangladesh perspective, are they shaping up the right way? What with a little bit more drama that Tamim has been left out of the squad, and then he's hit out at the selectors, and then his skipper Shakib hit out at him. Have you been following this drama?
Not that closely, but I just saw that there was drama afoot in the Bangladesh camp, which made me go, oh no, not again. After all the Shakib drama that was going on a few months ago, where he was called a prima donna, and yeah, maybe he is a little bit, but the board seems to be a bit prickish sometimes. So basically, no, don't do that. stop this infighting. Not in expectation of a World Cup. Come on.
Well, they've even brought back the likes of Mahmoodullah and given him a chance. So I'm mostly thinking purely from a World Cup squad perspective. Okay, let's keep aside the fact that they've chosen to actually work without their most successful ODI cricketer, if he can be sort of termed like that. When you look at the rest of the squad for Bangladesh, if we can do a quick analysis of how they're doing. So from a purely fans perspective, are you happy to see the squad that's going to World Cup from Bangladesh? Did you see anybody else apart from Tamim that you think was left out?
Bangladesh is, I think, a weird one, because they, well, you said it, they left out their best ODI player. And I think it shows in these two games against New Zealand, when they were really having problems with their batting. It might be because they tried to do things differently and didn't take this warm-up series all that serious. That might be, but yeah, this is not looking too good from this warm-up series. It might actually be because this is an experimental 11 they were fielding. Well, they have to do a lot better during the World Cup. That's for certain.
Look, one word about that. I mean, for Shakib to have gone on to criticize the professionalism of Tamim and so on, it did not feel right. Again, you don't see captains talking about their main players in such a way, simply because one day they may have to play again in the same 11 together, and he seemed to have burned all his bridges there, Shakib. I don't know if those harsh words were necessary, but okay, fine. He thought he had to say those things. I let people around us judge whether he's right to have spoken so harshly. For me, I felt it was a bit on the harsher side. That's one thing. The other thing, you're right, they left him out. But then they've also given Mahmoodullah another go. They've given enough people a chance. People like Afif Hossain have missed out, right? So you know that these are all people who are sort of given a chance to prove they belonged in that squad, right? So they haven't made it. And that's possible simply because I told you they've gone for solidity above flash. They'd rather see their squad to 260 rather than in trying to go to 300 become 210 all out in a crucial game, right? So I expect they will make it tough Nobody will take Bangladesh lightly simply because they're playing in close to home conditions.
Yes.
And you would expect that their spinners will come in handy. The Miraz spinners are doing good. Shakib, you will never write him out. And that's already enough to add to, you know, Shorifull Islam being in good form, Hasan Mahmood bowling well, right? And then you'll have Mustafizur Rahman show up. He may not be a regular threat like he used to be a while back, but again, you would write them off at your own peril.
Absolutely.
And Litan Das has been having a very quiet time. I expect him to really come out firing in the World Cup. So that'll be a big deal as far as I'm concerned. So I don't know if they'll make the World Cup semifinals, but
no,
I expect they'll actually shock a couple of teams.
Yes, absolutely. They are, if anything, they are the banana peel that might make some favorites slip, actually.
Correct.
But I'm not having them in the semis either.
Okay, that's clear. From that series, if you move on to the England-Ireland series, where England sent in a completely experimental squad.
Yes.
Only whether Joe Root would really perform was the real talking point for me. And after the first ODI, he was withdrawn because he didn't get a chance to play. And they chose to go with a lot of hopefuls who are in and around the white ball squads.
Mm.
So you have Phil Salt, Will Jacks. So in the second ODI, Will Jacks showed his bit where he made 94. And then Ben Duckett made 48. But Sam Hain showed he belongs at the top level. Right?
Mm.
89. And then Bryden Carr showed he can bat a bit. He was batting pretty high. He was batting at 8. And he showed he can claim a number 8. Not only just a fast bowler. And they were comfortably able to keep Ireland down playing at home. I think Ireland looked short of a gallop. And they are saying they're already beginning their preparation for the upcoming World Cup, which is to be expected, frankly.
Mm.
So in this case, did the first of all the result surprise you? Let's start there.
No. It didn't surprise me. And I think this Ireland team is on the way out mostly. They're the old stalwarts, and they need to bring in a new generation of players, I think. This one, this is basically the Ehrenrunde, the lap of honor for most of their team, I would think. This series against England, given the fact they're not in the World Cup, this was probably the last hurrah for a lot of them. A big series.
No, I mean, for me, well, Paul Sterling has a couple of good years left, I think. I mean, they'll take as many years of service as they can get out of him.
Mm.
Fitness and other things allowing, like his participation in world T20 tournaments allowing. People like Barry McCarthy, Craig Young have come up well. Josh Little, I think, will be a good performer. Andy Balbirnie has had a bit of a fallow time recently, but I expect he'll bounce back strong. The likes of Curtis Camphor, Harry Tector, Lorcan Tucker, George Dockerill to an extent. This is, for me, the core of this 11. And they are the people whom I expect to take Ireland forward. Most of them are youngsters still in their 20s. So I would expect they would take Ireland forward. The third one, well, it would have been a little bit of a bloodbath.
Yeah.
I think they got away a bit easy there. But for me, the real takeaway was how the England bowlers bowled. Because in the second one, as well as mainly in the second one, they did enough well there. Because I think Rehan Ahmed was very promising for me.
Mm.
He did a lot of, and he showed a lot of promise. And then I think he's one to watch out for if you're an England selector, mainly in the longer format, because he can also bat a bit, you know.
Mm.
And I thought Bryden Carr, he was very impressive.
Mm-hmm. He was.
He has the pace. I mean, if he can stay fit, of course. Right. And the likes of Tom Hartley, whenever you're touring an Asian country, he may come into the picture. Also Will Jacks, by the way. He looked like a very, very classic batsman, extremely classic batsman. And he can bowl very good off spin. So he would be one of the starting players for me if you are playing even a test match in Asian conditions. And from that perspective, England selectors would be happy, do you think?
Yeah, I think they can be really content with what England did here, because this is absolutely the second or third 11 of England that was playing here, and they played well, I think.
Hmm. Yeah.
So
absolutely.
You know, there's the depth in the player pool in England now, at least in white ball cricket. I think that was the main takeaway from this series, I think. And another one, another story was the ground crew during the third ODI in Bristol on the county ground when it rained, which led to the match being abandoned. And the reason for the match being abandoned was that the grounds crew did not cover the pitch for a good 5 to 10 minutes after it started raining. And then they did something with the tarp that led to water running under it and basically damaging the pitch. So the game would not have been abandoned, I think, if the grounds crew did their job. So that was very, very disappointing. Poor tarp management ends game.
I mean, I read that somebody was trying to get under the covers to dry the pitch, even as there was still a bit of rain coming down. I don't know what that was all about. I really don't understand what is going on. By the way, I was supposed to commentate on that game with Kerala cricket, and I was a bit disappointed because that looked like a high-scoring game in the making, because Duckett had 100, England had 218, 31 overs. That looked like a 400 game, by the way.
Yeah.
Also, they had a Theophane Wurcombe, a player of South African descent, spinner, making it.
His ODI debut.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, I think he's born in New Zealand, Christchurch, Canterbury. So anyway, we'll leave that. Nonetheless, at least England would be happy with where they are, except for maybe form of Joe Root, or do you expect he'll come good? There's not a lot to worry.
Root is having a bit of a rough patch right now, I think. But you can never count out Joe Root, I would say. Or you disregard him at your own peril, because he's a classy batsman. And as they say, form is temporary, class is permanent. But he really, I guess he needs that one really good innings to cut the knot, basically. I think it's because it's such a mental thing, this getting into the zone and then stuff like that. And I think he might be overthinking things at the moment, and one good score can change all of that. Maybe he gets a good innings in the first match of the World Cup for England, and from there on everything will fall into place for Joe.
I'm hoping he already gets there in one of the practice games, you know, gets that breakthrough game, what you're talking about. And he feels comfortable enough. Suddenly, all of a sudden, look, he scores at, I don't know, 85, 90 per 100 balls in test matches these days. So for him, what does it matter what ball it is, what format it is anymore, right?
Yeah.
So it'll be okay, I think.
Yeah,
otherwise, England are very, 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 very formidable. I expect them to be one of the semi-finalists. But I don't know what you
England
think.
Is a semi-finalist. Yeah, I think so. Best ball is still going strong. I think they go to the semi-finals, but it's England in the subcontinent. It's going to be either a best ball massacre, or they will go down in glorious flames.
Look, when you see the way certain other teams are also playing, you might expect there might be more of air quotes basketball to be seen. If you were to have a quick chat on the India games,
yes,
right? So some very, 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 very exciting scores, at least second and the third game. The third game was a bit of a disappointment if you're an India fan, but you'll take it considering the series was already sealed too. What do you think of the Indian batting in the second ODI?
Really, 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 really good. Almost 400 runs scored. And Shubman Gill making a ton, Shreyas Iyer making a ton, Yadav with a 72. And that was a really, really good ODI innings, I would say. In the third ODI, that's why I'm getting a bit nervous, because the Australians have Maxi. Magic Maxi does it again. In the first one was an absolute masterclass, and they they didn't even have their superstars. There's no Rohit Sharma on that scorecard. There is no Virat Kohli on that scorecard, and they had no Jasprit Bumrah either. Mm.
I think Bumrah played in the third one.
In the second one.
Yeah, correct. There it was all Prasidh Krishna, Mohammad Shami, and the spinners. So before we move on from the second one, there seems to be one decisive spell of bowling as well, which seemed to have, put right something, which we all expected might come through yet. So Ashwin, I don't know if you saw that spell where he took out Warner, before that Marnus, and then Josh Inglis.
No, I did not see it. I'm sorry. Yes, but... he's absolutely the pick of the bowlers in this match. After looking over the scorecard, after that, everyone else has an economy above six, and he is below six, and he has three wickets in seven overs. This is pretty impressive.
He was almost getting the ball to swing in, almost drift in and leave off the pitch. He was unplayable in certain places or in certain time. I think the ball that got Marnus Labuschagne, I mean, it would have got many a player out. I don't know what Warner was doing, trying to reverse sweep and then not review.
Mm.
He started the batting as a right-hander,
mm-hmm.
then became a left-hander trying to sweep. That is, he was air quotes starting as a right-hander, he tried to reverse sweep.
Mm.
And he hit the ball onto his own pad, didn't review it. It was given out. Josh Inglis was worked out. Simply because of that movement in the air, he didn't know how to play it, whether to rush at the bowler or stay and play him from the crease. And he tried to sweep one too many and was out plumb. So from that perspective, I think Sean Abbott did a bit of hitting just to, again, reinforce the belief of he can play at seven or even eight, right, in that team. And that meant, India have sort of answered most of the questions they were worried about. So in the first ODI, KL Rahul had played an anchor innings where Surya had hit out. They had won that game. In this innings, KL Rahul also played a cameo. And Surya also played a cameo. And most importantly, Shreyas Iyer scored 100 at 115 strike rate against a very, very good attack. Josh Hazlewood, Sean Abbott, Spencer Johnson, and Cameron Green, you wouldn't take for granted there. And Cameron Green went for more than 100. So that way, if you look at it, India was probably very happy with all the boxes ticked. And then, once Ashwin dismissed the top order cheaply, Jadeja came back and cleaned the tail off with Shami getting a wicket as well. So it was almost an ideal prep if you were to think of it.
Mm.
And from that point of view, them losing the third ODI was not too much of a surprise for me. Glenn Maxwell also did his bit. I mean, he failed with the bat a little bit. You would have thought stage was set perfectly for him to score, 20 ball 50 and take Australia to 400. That didn't happen, but he did it with the ball. And Indian fast bowlers were put to the sword from the first over onwards, which I wanted to see at some point in time. Mitchell Marsh was a bit unlucky. He got himself out. David Warner again tried to sweep. I don't know what he was doing, right? And then the lower order was a little bit worrisome if you are Australian, right? Stephen Smith got runs. Marnus got runs. Everybody got runs. Pat Cummins did a little bit. Pat Cummins was in and out of the squad. They were managing, I think. Right? Yep. And same for Mitchell Stark. Yeah. So for Australia, they got the boxes ticked. Mitchell Stark was okay. And most importantly, Glenn Maxwell had a match-winning bowling hand.
Absolutely.
Well, I would ask you one crucial question. What? Look, with the youngsters playing, India are able to make 400. With all the golden oldies back, they can't even make 300. What's going on?
Yeah, that's a bit. but maybe that was a really a case of Australia underestimating the youngsters. Then they lose in spectacular fashion, and suddenly it's a. Oh dear, what are we going to do? We need to be on our A game here, especially with Rohit and Virat coming back. I think both teams can be relatively satisfied with the warm-up series here. The Australians have that victory in the third ODI that was really dominant. The Australians are a tournament team. They always show up in a tournament. They're going to the semifinals, no doubt about it. As will India.
Yeah, you've already locked in three then. I'm curious which your fourth spot will be, and you've actually said it might be New Zealand. So you actually named your four. Will you stick with that then, Leah? New Zealand, England?
I will stick with that, yes. I think the semifinals will be in any combination, England, India, Australia, and New Zealand.
Then we should go one step further. Who will win the World Cup for you?
But you see, that absolutely depends on what matchups we will have in the semifinals. I think India would beat New Zealand any day of the week in a semifinal, in a knockout game. They will win.
Well, I wouldn't be so sure. I'll come to you why. But you first.
Okay. No. It's I'm interested.
So basically, New Zealand have beaten India twice in very crucial games. The World Cup semi-final last time, and in the finals of the World Test Championship, not very long after.
Yes.
I think New Zealand are able to pull out their A game while India sort of subside into some sort of self-worried shell. And that causes this problem. I don't know if India are able to break out of it. If it were to be any other game, I would still say India will beat New Zealand hands down. But when it comes to a knockout game, somehow New Zealand are able to pull out their A game. Let's see if it'll work out.
Okay. My reasoning behind this is that India play it at home. That's a huge advantage. Mm-hmm. And yeah, okay, they beat India in 2019, but that was in England in conditions that probably favored New Zealand. Same in the Test Championship, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then it's in the other semi-final. I'm having
England.
Australia beat England, I think. Mm. And I think this would be a really, really good final. Australia v India India would be a blockbuster final.
Absolutely, I think. I understand, and I'll give over to that as something I would really look forward to. As I would jokingly say to my boss, I might fall sick that day. Right.
Yeah. Yes.
Just one small word on Ashwin's inclusion. I think he was given a chance. I think Captain Rohit may have had a bit of a you know, a brainstorm last month.
Mm.
What is all this rumor mongering we hear that Rohit's phone got stolen in Rajkot and then somebody may have called the selectors using that phone that they should choose? Ashwin.
What? I did not hear about that.
I think there is some truth to it in as much that he lost his phone.
Okay.
I mean, he will never accept it because it's losing a phone is a big deal. A lot of private data would be on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But with the joke that somebody used that to call the selectors and say, choose Ashwin, I think that's just somebody building on what's happened and then, right?
Yeah, but I choose to believe that is true.
Right. Well, we'll see. We are coming from the land of Bollywood. Everything is possible. Who knows? All right. Now, moving on to slightly serious stories.
Mm-hmm.
Indian women have won the gold in the Asian Games cricket women's trophy, women's section. Surprises for you. They're playing for the first time, apparently. But yeah, they win a gold.
Yes. And no, I think they were... I expected them to win. Women's cricket in India has come a very, very long way since the Women's World Cup, where they lost to England in the semi-finals.
Oh, dear. Finals, I think, where they just collapsed.
Oh, yes, it was the final. Yes. But I think there has been a lot of work has been put into women's cricket by the board. The game has been professionalized, and I think the administrators now take it more seriously. So I think they were the favorites to win it, and they did win it.
Absolutely right. I think I was very happy to see the way Bangladesh team played.
Mm.
They punched well above their weight, and they took the bronze. Sri Lankan team, I think, are potentially the second best Asian team when it comes to women's cricket, and they showed that they were the runners-up. The final was very tight, actually.
Mm.
It was only a 19-run win where not even 120 runs were scored by India batting first. So that was going to be a very, very tough game. We saw one new star from women's bowling perspective, Taita Sadhu,
who's
just well short of 19 at this point in time. She took 4 overs, 3 for 6 with one maiden. So fantastic bowling. India never looked like they were going to lose that game, and they didn't. So that was fantastic. So congratulations to the women's Indian team. They've done well.
Mm-hmm.
So from there, moving on to another, you know, Asian Games miracle, spectacle, actually, I must say. Not a miracle.
Mongolia Nepal. Were never expected to win any of that. No, but it's a spectacle. You're right about that.
Well, somebody scored a 50 of 9 balls. That's quite something. Exactly. Kushal Mala scored 100 of 34. I mean, he broke a record that was previously held by 3 people. David Miller, Rohit Sharma, and Sudesh Vikramasekara. 3 people had a record of 100 of 35 balls. He's broken it, 34 balls. And Dipendra Singh Airi, who's actually more known for his bowling, actually came out and hit a 50 of 9 balls. And first of 300. Is that another frontier that has fallen to batters again, do you think? Or was this meant to happen some point in time?
I'm actually surprised that about this. Yeah, the first 300 in a T20, I was actually relatively certain that we'd see a 500 in an ODI before we'd see a 300 in a T20. But we didn't. Sure, it was against Mongolia, who are... Yeah, well, I mean, there are no players in any franchise league from Mongolia. So, are there?
No. Look, I think if you go one step back, they learned to play cricket only about 3 to 4 months ago is what I got to know.
Oh, yes, exactly. But props to them for showing up and giving it their best, I think.
Right.
It takes a belief in yourself. That you go out there with so little preparation and not collapse completely.
100% right.
Yeah, they tried. They gave it their best shot. So that's commendable, I think.
They batted 20 overs out. They lost the game, but they batted 20 overs out again in today's game. So, I mean, it's a very nice positive story if you are a cricket fan and looking to see cricket spread far and wide in this world. So from that perspective, absolutely, it's a very good story. But I think, again, Nepal serving notice that nobody should take them lightly. They have had a few reverses compared to where they were, at least in the Asia Cup and so on. But they will be a force to reckon. They will be, let's just say, for the lack of a better example, Afghanistan in a couple of years.
They could very well be.
All right. Moving on from the Asia Cup, South Africa have had a little bit of a jolt when it comes to their squad for the World Cup. They have lost Norkia and Magala from the World Cup to injury. At least when it comes to Norkia, it looks even more serious because they are saying it could be a stress fracture of the back. That's very, very serious.
Ooh.
And Magala was already struggling with something, but he's been ruled out. So that means Andile Pelu-Khwayo and Lizard Williams come into the squad. I think both are very experienced cricketers, and I think Andile also gives you a little bit of balance because he showed again that he can hit the ball long and hard in that recent ODI series, right? So against Australia. So that was good. So, you know, I think South Africa will definitely miss, at least for me, Henrik Norkia, because between him and Kagiso Rabada and somebody like either Kutse or, Jansen backing them up, they could have run through sides, even in India, I think.
Absolutely. And I would agree they will miss Norkia much more than Magala, I think. He is a kind of their talisman.
In a way, yes. I mean, on his day, he can be really devastating. But mostly, if there is a little bit of a miss, people take him for a lot of runs. So it depends on how it goes. But I mean, you would always be wary of playing against a player like him in a knockout situation, because I mean, he can make you 30 for 5 in no time.
Mm.
All right.
Mm.
That's one thing. The other news is for Sri Lanka, they've had a bit of a setback. No Chamira, no Hasaranga as they go into the World Cup. Again, something that you would think at least Hasaranga would be a huge miss. And Chamira, when it comes to the new ball,
Hasaranga.
Right, you would think that's again a huge miss as far as Sri Lanka are concerned.
Mm. Yeah, I think this is this really, really hits Sri Lanka. I don't think they may be a bit like Bangladesh in that respect, that they might win a shocker in the opening stages of the tournament. Mm. They might beat higher seeded sides. But I don't think they will make the semifinals.
Indeed. I mean, at least that's the opinion, even by most analysts going out there. But let's see. You never write Sri Lanka off. After all, in the last India-hosted World Cup, they reached the final. It was an All-Asian final. You never know
yes.
how it may go.
Yeah. And didn't they win it in 96? Was in India as well?
Well, the final was in Lahore, but India was indeed one of the hosts.
They won that one.
Absolutely. You never write Sri Lankans off, especially in conditions where, you know, Tikshna and Pathirana, they may give you that scare with the ball, and then you always have their very, very talented top order. You don't know which way this is going to go. So let's see. Let's see if they're able to give us some interesting games and maybe a shock or two. So from there, well, one small news that has broken just very recently. So Marnus Labuschagne is going to replace Ashton Agar. So he sort of brought into the squad sort of as a backup, because Australia are planning to carry the injured Travis Head in the first part of the World Cup simply because he had a broken hand. So it was a tough call. They decided to retain him, but then they need some batting cover. And when Ashton Agar pulled up a bit injured, they decided to give Marnus Labuschagne a go. Surprised at all? They've not gone for a like-for-like spinner, like somebody like, you know, Ashton Turner back home from Australia. So,
yeah, that's actually that's the surprising part of this story. Labuschagne is a batsman through and through. He bowls a little bit. He bowls a little bit. I don't know if what it means for the Australian team. It probably means that Maxwell will bowl a lot more than he was going to. Yeah, it's an interesting choice. They bring in Labuschagne for Agar, and I mean it's kind of surprising that they didn't include him in the first place.
Right. I mean, look, I think I felt between him and Smith they were more or less similar quantity.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like they have chosen for the batting confidence he's brought. So look, he's made 421 runs in 8 matches since he came back as a sub, right? As always, like a sub, concussion sub. And then that sort of confidence that he gave, and the way Maxwell has shaped up probably in the nets as well as how he bowled in the last ODI versus India. You think, you know, they are going to trust him with 8 to 10 overs in every innings now, Maxwell. He's going to be a starter in the 11, right? And then the squad...
Yeah,
will have Marnus Labuschagne and Head. Head is probably the number one opener, but if there is no chance of Head coming out to open, you'll see pretty much what happened in the last ODI where Mitchell Marsh will open with David Warner. You will see that additional batter in the form of Marnus Labuschagne in the lineup, where probably somebody like Marcus Stoinis may miss out. This is my thought process. Cameron Green may still play.
Interesting. Yes, yes. Yes, that I didn't really think about. Yeah, Stoinis might lose out here. Actually, interesting. Well, the Australians, it's kind of an embarrassment of riches with their batting. I think their bowling attack will be a bit more hit and miss. Interesting.
Okay.
I think Agar was a really, really important player for them because he's a rather good white ball spinner, actually.
Right. No, I was hoping somebody like, you know, Tanvir Sangha or Ashton Turner may make the cut. Somebody more exciting,
yes.
Young, because Ashton Turner is a very capable bat as well. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was just expecting a like-for-like replacement in terms of there are no like-for-like replacements for a head. But yeah, I mean, it's a tough call, but I think they've gone with the best that they could have. Well, we've had a couple of interesting news. One, Pakistan's men get a landmark central contract before leaving for the World Cup. So this is sort of something that was going on for a while when the previous contract expired 30th June. Babar Azam led the negotiations off the field as well. Him and certain senior players like Rizwan, Shaheen Shafridi, Shadab Khan have been sort of negotiating on behalf of the players. Looks like the negotiations have come through very well because they are getting three-year contracts instead of a one-year contract. And there has been a retainer for every month. But more importantly, they're also going to get a fixed share of revenues of the PCB itself. Whatever PCB were to earn from ICC and international tournaments and so on, that's very nice. So you're a stakeholder, you're performing, that means you're getting a part of the booty or bounty, whichever way you look at it. That's nice. That's always good to hear.
Yeah, and the important thing is it's a revenue share. So the possibility of what is called Hollywood accounting is much lower than if you are entitled to a percentage of the profits. Mm. Because as everybody knows, no Hollywood film makes any profit.
Well, some of them have earned billions, but okay, we'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
No, but I know what you mean. At least in this case, I understand what you're trying to point.
Yeah. I was really surprised to see that apparently since the 30th of June, the Pakistani national team has basically been playing for free because they refused the offer of the board to extend the conditions of the old contract until a new one can be put in place. So since June, they have not been paid.
Well, I think there is a retainer that's always paid to them, but the rest of it based on whatever new one will be paid. In time, whenever the dues will be settled, is what I'm trying to say. I don't think in such a setup they'll ever be worried about the dues not being paid. The players, even though there is no contract in place, they can be rest assured when they play that the dues will be paid back. At whatever level of agreement is reached eventually. So it usually goes like that. But yes, it could have been done a little better. Yeah, sure. I think in the end, the players will be happy with the outcome, rather than something hastily negotiated and so on. Absolutely. See, what you have to credit them with is not pulling a West Indies-like stunt where they reach a neutral point and then say, we will not go until a contract is negotiated or whatever. I mean, I think the board should not be compared. That's also a flank. So, let's see. Let's see if, you know, Pakistan, they've been given a boost in the arm heading into the World Cup. And Babar has clearly declared reaching the last four is just the minimum target he wants to achieve. And anything beyond is what the minimum needs. So that's going to be very interesting if you are to follow his comments and his team's performances will follow, let's hope.
Yeah, I didn't include Pakistan in my picks for the semifinals, but I think I'm not changing it. There will be some heartbreaking losses.
Right.
I think.
Nobody's picking South Africa. And I think we might all be erring in not focusing on South Africa and Pakistan at all. But yeah, I'm going to wait it out. Right. All right.
Okay.
On to some interesting other news as well, where you see that Naveen Ul Haq, 24-year-old, who's been playing for Afghanistan since 2016, has decided he will probably take a break from ODIs after the World Cup. Surprise?
Well, I think it's become more accepted during the last years for players to take time out of the game for burnout or mental health reasons, which I think is a good thing. It can prolong the career, and we don't want these people to develop any crippling problems. So, yeah, I'm fine with it. Whatever you need to do to make sure that you are okay is fine with me. I mean, it was Maxwell, then it was Stokes, the most high profile players that took time out of their careers, took a break from their careers to take a step back and say, I can't do this right now. So I think it's a positive outcome that it's nowadays much more accepted. I don't want people to end their international careers like Trescothic or something like that.
You're right. We should hope that players are managing their mental well-being as well as their physical well-being more carefully these days.
And yes.
If they choose to take off from one format, so be it. I mean, we can't judge the pressures that they undergo.
Mm. No, absolutely not.
Same for Quinton de Kock. It does seem a bit weird. I did say it in the last episode as well. But at the end of the day, it's his choice fully. Right.
Yeah.
Now, we finish with a couple of positive news.
Mm-hmm.
Sri Lanka's Dhanushka Gunatilaka, who was, you know, fighting a trial for an assault in Australia since 2022 November.
Yeah.
He's been declared not guilty under some very, very interesting circumstances. When you look at all the things that have been going on, you would even see why this was even brought to trials in the first place and so on. And then, the way it ended, I'm just worried a little bit about this player's mental well-being as well as his career going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit different than the case of Kugelein, who also wasn't found guilty, but he totally was. So now I think the all the circumstances of this not guilty verdict, I think he has been really exonerated here.
Right.
It's always really, really bad when you are for almost a year now. He has been basically detained in Australia. That's going to take a toll on you, I think. But I think his reputation has not suffered from this one.
Look, at least it probably gives a big lesson to international cricketers everywhere. While you are away, far away from home, one can imagine it might be tough times for you to be alone. And, you know, you may have to be very alone and not have any company, but you don't want to sign up on a dating app and then use it to make use of your free time. Let's just put it like this. Right.
Mm.
And that's a lesson that some of us may have to take as cricketers whenever we are traveling, especially international cricketers who are effectively representatives of their country wherever they go, ambassadors of the sport in general, right? You may have to be a bit careful there. So something that international cricketers may take heed going forward. But we are happy to hear, you know, he's been exonerated out and out, and even the judge actually questioned some of the conduct of the police. So that came through, but let's hope he's able to go back home, resume his life as a cricketer and play out whatever is left of his career. Maybe even make it to the team.
Because
many people may find it tough because he was not even allowed to go back home to Sri Lanka until the trial was not completed. He was out on bail.
Yes.
So it would have been a very harrowing sort of an experience, both financially and mentally, I'm sure. So let's hope he makes a comeback. And in any case, if we don't know the ins and outs, not everything is made public, of course. We hope that the victim, or the alleged victim in this case, is also getting some sort of mental peace, that this is closed and everybody concerned can move on from what has happened. Because I was speaking to another podcaster with whom I collaborate from time to time, and he expressed an outrage on why the player's name came out into the public when the alleged victim was never named. This is always the case, and I can imagine that that's how it can be. But I wonder if Dhanushka Gunatilaka, being far from home and also being an international name, so to say, it made it easy for the authorities to simply leak his name or simply release his name. That was also something the other podcaster was not happy about. I don't know what your thoughts are on this.
I think it's I'm pretty sure that this has to do with criminal law. it depends on whether you're the complainant or put on trial. I think that's the legal reason for the name being his name being leaked while hers is being withheld. I'm not any sort of lawyer, but I think that is kind of the reason, in at least in Australia. Right. It's a bit different in other jurisdictions, but in England, Australia, the name of people criminally accused is basically fair game, I think.
Right. Well, I mean, in theory, it's about warning those around us that this person in question may or may not be very serious.
Yes.
But it's, I think, a very, very old old practice that may have to be looked at, simply because in such a case, when a person is completely exonerated, he will remain guilty in the eyes of the society.
Exactly.
Nobody goes into the detail of what happened. But anyway, I think we shouldn't go too deep into that. All we wish Dhanushka Gunatilaka best of luck resuming his career.
Absolutely.
And, you know, maybe finishing it on a high. All right. Yes. Those were all the cricketing news off the field. There's one other thing that's just been brought to my notice, of course, that there was a cricket series between New Zealand and South Africa women, an ODI series that was currently underway, which, surprise, surprise, South Africa have clinched comfortably, winning the first two ODIs. Again, another 100 from Laura Folwart. And they chased down a potentially tricky 253.
Yes.
And they won it very comfortably with just 3 wickets lost in the 46th over. Any surprises at all there for you?
No, I think the South African women's cricket team is really strong. They are, I think they should be internationally, I guess they're better on a world scale than the men's team in ODIs. Uh-huh. I think.
Shots fired.
No, the South African women's team has a really, really high standard, and I think they should be ranked higher in women's ODI rankings than the men, and I'm pretty sure they are.
Right.
And also Laura Wolfart has probably the best cover drive or the best drive in all of cricket.
Wow. Okay. I'll keep an eye out for this then. I had not noticed.
Yes.
It, but who knows?
Yeah, it's frankly stuff that goes on the subreddit front foot porn. Absolutely.
Nice.
There are three cricket subreddits that they're called front foot porn, back foot porn, and death rattle porn. the first one obviously for the drives, the second one for, I don't know, pulls and hooks and stuff like that, and the third one is for really, really good bowling, clean bowls and stuff like that.
I see. Very interesting.
Yes.
Very interesting. You should send me some videos offline for my offline consumption and so on. But okay.
All right. Okay.
Now, those are all the news stories from this episode. That's a wonderful way to end the episode, I think, Leah. Thank you once again for lovely thoughts, some forthright opinions as always, and some fun at the end.
Yeah. Thank you very, very much for having me. And thank you to the audience for your attention. Thank you.
Once again, would you like to give out some of the links, especially your own YouTube
channel?
Oh,
yes. I am on Twitter at LinuxLeah, LinuxLeah. The L's are capital. Everything else is lowercase. From there, you can find the links to all the stuff that I do, because right now, not certain if telling you what my YouTube channel is really working, but on my Twitter I have everything linked.
Fair enough. Perfect. All right. That's a wrap for this episode. We wish all our listeners a good day, wherever they may be listening from. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.